chapter with a true story of love discovered during public sex, just to give you some inspiration to explore. June had never been to a play party before. "That's evidently what they call orgies in California," she mused. "Well, at least it's a lesbian orgy." How on earth, she wondered, did I come to be the guest of honor at an orgy? Actually, she knew how it came about. She was visiting her dear friend Flash in San Francisco, and Flash announced that she had the use of a house in the country for the weekend, and she wanted to throw a party and introduce June to her friends. Sounds like fun, thought June. And then Flash began to talk about having a chick rite to celebrate the advent of spring by setting up mattresses and safer sex supplies in the middle of the living room. June had argued, and at first had refused to attend, but Flash talked her into it, pointing out that she didn't actually have to have sex with anybody if she didn't want to. June finally said okay, adding that if she couldn't stand it, she would hike down to the local coffee house with a book. So Flash went on setting up the house for the convenience of sexual pleasure, and June hid in the kitchen making dip, one party function that she at least understood. As the guests began to arrive, June began to wonder whether she'd be able to stay at this event. She was introduced to a parade of the most outrageous dykes she had ever seen. Femmes and butches like birds in bright plumage, sporting exotic garments designed to display a gallery of tattoos, gleaming here and there with jewelry set in body parts that June did not want to think about. And they were all so young. June felt the full weight of her 48 years. She figured you can't go wrong being polite, so she said the same "how do you do" she would anywhere else, wondering how she'd respond if one of these enthusiastic orgiasts actually told her how she did do. In at last came a couple of women of unabashed middle age. One of them, Carol, was a dead ringer for June's great-aunt Mary. If great-aunt Mary had ever chosen to dress in high butch gear complete with boots and cowboy hat. June felt relieved to have found one woman she could relate to. Then Carol smiled a dazzling smile and announced that she would like to put her hand in June's cunt. June, swallowing a gasp but resolutely polite, said that she didn't really feel quite ready for that, and Carol replied cheerily, "Okay, then, I'll check in with you later." Great goddess, thought June, there's no escape. June knew about fisting, had learned to do it with a lover who liked it, knew it was safe when done properly, but it seemed like an odd way to get acquainted with someone whose name she'd only learned in the last half hour. Then Lottie came in, close to June's age, but not dressed like it. Lottie's obviously dyed, flaming red curls set off a black chiffon dress, through which could be clearly seen long black stockings, a black leather corset, and a great deal of voluptuous pale flesh. How does she balance on those heels, June wondered, as Lottie hugged, kissed, and chatted her way through the progressively less clothed mass of partygoers. June overheard Lottie thanking various women for their participation in a previous orgy held in celebration of Lottie's 50th birthday. Do these people ever get together and not have sex, wondered June. Puppy piles began to form on the floor in front of the couch where June was sitting. Untidy heaps of women necking and petting, smiling and laughing, Lottie and Carol conspicuously among them. June decided to retreat to the deck, where she could perhaps soak out her terror in the hot tub. The hot tub was quieter, and June managed to chat with a few women and began feeling marginally more comfortable. Then Lottie reappeared. Off came the dress, the stockings, the shoes. June found herself wondering what it would feel like if she could see Lottie's pussy, and instantly wondered if anyone else had noticed her looking. Lottie slipped into the warm water and immediately asked June if she would rub her neck because it felt stiff. "Sure," June heard herself say. "I'd be happy to." Oh, no, she thought. What have I let myself in for? Lottie's skin felt warm and silky under her fingers, and June rubbed and soothed. June felt relaxed by the rhythm of massage and reassured as Lottie conversed about perfectly normal things. Her work and June's, their philosophies of life, June's Buddhism, Lottie's paganism. Eventually, Lottie's neck relaxed, and the hot tub began to feel too warm. and Lottie brightly suggested they find out what was going on inside. She climbed out of the tub, pulled on her stockings and heels, and darted inside. "Holy Minerva," thought June, "can I follow her in there?" "No," she decided firmly, "I can't." June found a table in a corner on the patio and determinedly admired the stars. Lottie, meanwhile, was finding she had a thing or two to think about as well. In the living room, her friends were happily disporting themselves on couches, in armchairs, and in front of the fire. But Lottie was thinking about June. "What is it about her that turns me on so much? Does she like me? Will she play with me? Doesn't look like she's used to playing at parties. Oh, well, there's always a first time. Now, where did that girl go?" Lottie scanned the living room, but there was no June to be found. The living room was actually pretty interesting, and Lottie contemplated giving up the chase and finding a friend to play with, but intrigue triumphed. She made her way toward the kitchen, stepping over various happy people, and lingering here and there to appreciate some particularly exciting activity. Pausing to check out the dip and replenish her blood sugar, Lottie looked out the window, and there was June hiding out on the patio. "Ah, here's the opportunity," thought Lottie as she arranged a few goodies on a plate and trotted outside to share them with June. But although they were chatting quite amiably, Lottie felt she wasn't connecting. Her most flirtatious sallies were met with no response whatsoever. June, petrified, would only breathe deep and consciously hold as still as she could. Lottie, frustrated, decided on the direct approach. "I think you're really attractive. Would you like to play with me? What sort of things do you like to do?" June, cornered again, stammered, "I don't think I'm ready to have sex in public. So sorry." Just then, Carol, sans cowboy hat but still wearing her boots, although she seemed to have lost her shirt somewhere, sauntered up to the table and sat down. While June wondered how she could disappear into the bushes without appearing gauche, Lottie greeted Carol by placing her thigh, which Carol, being a woman who knew how to act, promptly stroked and admired in Carol's lap. Lottie, not out of revenge, but simply from a desire not to waste a perfectly good party, asked Carol, "How's your dance card tonight? Got room for me?" Carol asked what was her fancy, and Lottie suggested that she had a yen for a sensitive fist, and Carol said she would be happy to oblige, but first needed to check with Susie about a plan they had for later. Both happily trotted off, and June was left to herself. Was she relieved, she wondered? Well, not exactly. Returning to the living room, Lottie was surprised to see Carol and June both sitting in the window seat, backs to the sides, feet in the middle. Lottie, never slow to leap on opportunity, sashayed across the room, climbed up on both pairs of feet, and proclaimed, "Here I am!" Carol, well-versed in the ways of femmes, called for gloves and lube and firmly pushed Lottie into June's lap. "Will you hold her for me, please?" June opened her mouth, but nobody waited for her answer, and next thing, there she was, holding Lottie's gently squirming body. Amazing, thought June. Just amazing. She got a good grip on Lottie, took a deep breath, and off she went on the ride. June concentrated on keeping up a good front and trying not to notice several smiling women who had settled down to watch the action on the window seat, while Carol competently went to work to turn Lottie on, loop her up, and get her off. Oh, my God, thought June. How am I going to get through this? I'm touching this woman's breast, and I hardly know her. Maybe, she thought, I can pretend this is someone I've already made love with. Lottie had braced her foot over Carol's shoulder against the window frame and was energetically pushing herself down on Carol's hand. She let out a big groan as the hand slipped in, and they both started fucking hard and loud. June had all she could do to prevent Lottie from writhing out of her grip and falling onto the floor. Lottie finally came. Loudly, noticed June. Very loudly. And June noticed she hadn't breathed for a while and took a big, gasping breath. All three let their bodies go limp on the window seat and invested a few moments in just feeling good. Reality eventually asserted itself. Lottie sat up and politely offered to fuck Carol in return. Carol said, "No thanks, I already promised Susie." And Lottie and Carol went off in different directions, leaving June alone on the window seat and feeling a bit thunderstruck. "I must have fallen into some other universe," marveled June. "Who are these women, anyway?" Although it was kind of fun, and I think I did okay, but it was still too much. I think I better go to sleep. A day passed. Back at home, Lottie found she could not stop thinking about June. She called Flash and discovered that June had flown out of San Francisco that morning. 2 days later, June received this letter. "Dear June, it's a beautiful morning up here on my mountain. The sun is streaming through the redwood trees. The sky is very blue with little cloud puffs. Yesterday, walking up on the ridge, I saw a huge jackrabbit. The irises are finished, and it's time for morning glories, rhododendrons, and lots of tiny, bright, exquisite flowers, to whom I have not been properly introduced. Do you live in the city? If I make your mouth water for the mountains, will you come visit me? Who are you, anyway? Write me and tell me about yourself. I am particularly interested in how, as a Buddhist, you deal with desire and passion. I've been thinking some about this since we met, and realized that I am not a Buddhist because, although I have gotten a great deal from my connections to Zen, including learning a lot about letting go of desire, my spiritual path is about grasping desire. Passion might be a more appropriate word here, as if it were the ox and riding it as a vehicle to communion with the Tao. I worry that this might not be an acceptable practice to you. Although I am used to being various people's version of anathema, I would rather that not be the case with you. I really like you. I really like the connection we made at Flash's, and I hope we get the chance to explore it further. So write and reveal yourself to me. What are your thoughts about sex, connection, art, nature? What are your fantasies? I really want to know. I bet you dream up some great bedtime stories. I wish you were here. Writing to you is making me nervous, and I would like a cuddle. As I read over this letter, trying to decide how far to go, I realize I have probably already gone too far. Oh, well, I always do. Love, Lottie." 8 months and approximately $3,000 worth of phone bills later, not to mention a few impulsive airfares, June put all her worldly goods in her truck, Lottie flew out to meet her, and they drove across the Great Divide to a sweet little house in the country where they lived together for many happy years. Conclusion. A Slut Utopia. Well, here we are at the end of our book. But before we launch you back out into the world, we want to leave you with one final concept that may help you shape your thinking as you design your own life full of whatever kinds of sex and love you want. From two to many. The world is very fond of twos. Black and white, male and female, mind and body, good and bad. These pairs, we all learn, are opposed. There's the right way and the wrong way, and our task is to do battle to defend the right and destroy the wrong. This kind of thinking dominates our courts, our politics, and our talk shows, with some crazy results. For instance, some people believe that anyone who enjoys sex outside of marriage, or a kind of marriage that's different from theirs, must be attacking their marriage. Anything that is different must be opposed, must be the enemy. When right and wrong are your only options, you may believe that you can't love more than one person, or that you can't love in different ways, or that you have a finite capacity for love, that many must somehow be opposed to one, or that your only options are in love and out of love, with no allowance for different degrees or kinds of love. We would like to propose something different. Instead of these simple-minded either-or arguments, consider the possibility of seeing and valuing everything that there is. Without viewing them as in opposition to one another. We think that if you can do this, you will discover that there are as many ways to be sexual as there are to be human, and all of them are valid. There are lots of ways to relate, to love, to express gender, to share sex, to form families, to be in the world, to be human. And none of them in any way reduces or invalidates any of the others. When we open our mind to a world beyond opposites, we become able to see beyond unrealistic perfection and unachievable goals. We can free ourselves to be fully conscious of all the wonderful variety and diversity that there is right now in the world, right here, in the present, available to us. Thus, sluthood can become a path to transcendence, a freeing of the mind and spirit as well as the body, a way of being in the world that allows expanded awareness, spiritual growth, and love beyond imagining. A Slut Manifesto. We believe that when we examine the issues that limit our relationships and our understanding of how we might be, we are essentially planning for a society that is appropriate to the way many people live today, that meets our need for change and growth, while it feeds our fundamental desire for belonging and family. We believe that monogamy will continue to thrive as it always has, a perfectly valid choice for those who truly choose it. We don't think it's much of a choice when you are forbidden to choose anything else. We want to open our vision to accommodate monogamy as well as a plethora of other options, to plan for family and social structures that have growing room, that will continue to stretch and adapt, that we can fit to our needs in the future. We believe that new forms of families are evolving now and will continue to evolve, not to supplant the nuclear family, but to supplement it with an amazing abundance, a whole world of choices about sharing family and sex and love. We want to set you free to invent the society you want to live in. Our vision of utopia has free love in all its forms as the foundation of our beliefs about reality, about possibility, about staying in the moment and planning the future. We believe that sexual freedom helps us to see our lives as they really are, with the honesty to perceive ourselves clearly and the fluidity to let us move onward as our needs alter, as a changing and growing self with changing and growing partners in a changing and growing world. We see ethical sluthood leading us to a world where we respect and honor each individual's boundaries more than we honor any preconceived set of rules about what their boundaries ought to be. And in expanding our sexual lives, we foresee the development of an advanced sexuality where we can become both more natural and more human. Sex really is a physical expression of a whole lot of stuff that has no physical existence. Love and joy, deep emotion, intense closeness, profound connection, spiritual awareness, incredibly good feelings, sometimes even transcendent ecstasy. In our utopia, intellect is not a trap that we get stuck in, but an honored tool we use to discover and access all the parts of ourselves and give form to our experience. We free our natural selves by opening our intellects to sensual awareness of our bodies. And when we are no longer stuck in our intellects, we become more like spirit, intuitive, experiencing the joy of life for the simple sake of experiencing, in communion with ourselves, with each other, and beyond. Our favorite sex fantasy, abundance. We want everyone to be free to express love in every possible way. We want to create a world where everyone has plenty of what they need, of community, of connection, of touch and sex and love. We want our children to be raised in an expanded family, a connected village within urban alienation, where there are enough adults who love them and each other, so there is plenty of love and attention and nurturance, more than enough to go around. We want a world where the sick and aging are cared for by people who love them, where resources are shared by people who care about each other. We dream of a world where no one is driven by desires they have no hope of fulfilling, where no one suffers from shame for their desires or embarrassment about their dreams, where no one is starving from lack of sex. We dream of a world where no one is limited by rules that dictate that they must be less of a person and less of a sexual person than they have the capacity to be. We dream of a world where nobody gets to vote on your life choices, or who you choose to love, or how you choose to express that love, except yourself and your lovers. We dream of a time and a place where we will all be free to publicly declare our love for whoever we love, however we love them. And may we all look forward to a lifetime of dreams come true.
This has been The Ethical Slut, a practical guide to polyamory, open relationships, and other adventures, written by Dossie Easton and Janet W. Hardy. Copyright 2009 by Celestial Arts. Production copyright 2012 by Dossie Easton and Janet W. Hardy. Produced by Allegra Bandy of Odawa Productions.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.